Good afternoon, it's the Co-Creator Show, and I'm Jennifer Lynch, and today I've got with me Jane Terrace. She's a therapist who does reverse therapy. She's a very busy person. She particularly likes helping people with ME. She has been an ME sufferer herself. She has recently written a book called Up to Me, which is a self-help manual. This is a fabulous book. I've been looking at it, and I feel that it's really going to be very beneficial for people that want to work on themselves. So, Jane, how are you today?
Hi, Jennifer. I'm very well, thank you.
Okay. Would you like to tell us a little bit about your book and also about your life?
Yes. Well, I've been a reverse therapist now for quite a number of years, having had ME myself. Previously to ME, I actually had fibromyalgia and depression. Reverse therapy treats all these conditions, as well as irritable bowel syndrome, emotional issues such as grief, anxiety, and traumas, and also some autoimmune problems and digestive disturbances, as well as postviral fatigue. It's a body-mind healing process as opposed to a psychotherapy, because we believe in two intelligences, and we have what we call a head mind and a body mind. And when we're healthy and head mind and body mind are harmonizing well together, then we're well. But we understand that when illness occurs, that there's a separation between head mind and body mind. And I'll just go and explain to you a little bit about what head mind and body mind is. Head mind is filled with all the information that we've been taught, such as phrases, roles, expectations, dictated to us by our parents, schooling, society that we've grown up in. But body mind, this is sort of like our core essence. It's our true self. It talks to us in feelings, emotions, and if need be, symptoms. It's honest. It's trustworthy. It has our best interests at heart, and it just wants us to get our needs met. Head mind is like our internal voice that keeps going on and on and on, even when something in our environment isn't actually right for us, as opposed to body-mind doesn't have that voice, so it's protected and it wants to get our needs met, and it will use symptoms and emotions as a way to get our attention. So that's a little bit about sort of how the head-mind, body-mind sort of works with reverse therapy. And what we go on to do is we then go on to teach people how to get into their body-mind to understand the communication coming from the body-mind in either emotions or in symptoms, as in cases of the illnesses I just mentioned. And then we go on to act and speak on those messages that are coming through to bring us back into alignment, and so hence we gain back our full health.
Right. Okay, that's interesting. And you've had success with chronic fatigue, fibromyalgia, depression, anxiety. It's quite a list here. Panic attacks, eating disorders, irritable bowel, and non-specific illnesses, post-traumatic stress disorder, phobias, sexual dysfunction, and autoimmune diseases.
Yes.
Do you feel that these have got a common link, all these?
Well, because in a way we sort of call them non-specific, but it's all about getting back into what the body is communicating and giving us these symptoms for. For example, in trauma cases, the most common emotion that'll raise is fear, because they've got an event in the past that's created the fear emotion, which is there to warn, guide, and protect us. So, so what we have to do is we have to act on that to ensure that person is protected and gets their need met. Hence, your emotion of fear can reduce.
Fear is, it manifests in different ways, doesn't
it?
Yes,
it does.
And it does affect parts of the body. I feel that, you can literally get fear in the leg, can't you? And fear, and it does connect into the physical. So are you a believer that, first of all, something is in the emotional body, it's an emotion first, and then it does actually play out in the physical body? I say play out as an easy way to explain it, but it's not. It then becomes obvious to the person that it is in the physical.
Yes, because when our body mind sees that we're repeatedly getting into a situation that isn't good for us, it'll try to get us to do or say something in that moment to change that situation. And initially it'll do that by emotions. But as time goes on, if we don't hear it, don't act on it, then it'll start sending us symptoms for us to take notice so that we can then act and speak on them. However, if we don't notice what the message of the symptoms are, then they'll turn them up. And so our symptoms will get that much stronger.
Your therapy does, from my view anyway, it does involve a certain amount of responsibility yourself, doesn't it?
It's all about the person taking responsibility. As a therapist, I'm actually only teaching them. They do it at their own pace. They can take on as much or as little as they want to. And very much like the book I've written, it is about us taking responsibility for ourselves and not looking for everybody else to fix us or to blame them or any other situation. It is very much about us being responsible.
Okay. Would you like to share a little bit about your own story? You did actually suffer from chronic ME yourself, didn't you? You were crippled with pain and unable to work. And you were only 20 years old when this happened.
Well, actually, there were two events, major events, really. When I was 20, I was involved in a car accident. I was knocked down as a pedestrian and suffered a lot of physical injuries. I went through many, many years of rehabilitation and surgeries and a very painful time. As a result of that, though, I trained in a physical therapy that I had received during that time that I felt was so beneficial. I set up a physical clinic for the treatment of management of injuries. And it was whilst running that for several years, and my children were very young at that time as well, that I started getting an awful lot of aches and joint pains and muscle pains myself, headaches, and the symptoms got worse and worse. And eventually it was like someone just pulled the plug out. I felt so ghastly, basically bedridden for long periods of time in a wheelchair. And it took quite a while to be diagnosed then as ME.
Yes, I mean, you're very, very brave to move forward. So what was the turning point for you here?
Well, as everything in my life, I always take the learning from it. I always try to turn it into a positive, no matter how painful something is at the time. I even like to sort of say, well, the most painful and most difficult situations have the bigger learning that we can take from it. So whilst laying in my bed one day, I realized I wasn't actually able to turn over. I was that weak at the time that people had to sort of help me turn over in bed. And I laid there and I thought, well, the only thing I can do is breathe. And so I started to breathe in different images, positivity and breathing out negativity, or breathing out the pain and breathing in comfort. And I tried loads of different things like that, and it really made a difference. And I started to think, well, the power of what we can do for ourselves is immense. So I then started to devise my own therapy, get myself well. And I got about 80% well when I came across reverse therapy, which was pretty much what I had discovered for myself. But they had taken it that much further and dotted the I's and crossed the T's for me that I hadn't quite got to. And so I then trained in that therapy as a result, because I just knew how much it worked. I mean, it was fantastic.
It's interesting, isn't it, that it wasn't actually, ME wasn't diagnosed as or recognised as a medical condition until 2007. How do you feel about that?
Well, it's interesting because actually if you go back through records, Florence Nightingale is believed to have had ME. It's quite incredible, isn't it? But and it is sad.
I didn't know that.
Yes,
that's amazing.
Yes, but it is sad, and I think Charles Darwin as well, actually. So it's a very old condition. It's just has taken this long for people to understand. And I think probably some of the worst damage was done when it was labelled the yuppie flu, sort of prior to that. And that made people who were suffering from it feel very inadequate and undervalued and underappreciated what they were going through. But since then, thankfully, you know, things have really moved on and it's very well recognised, and there is starting to be a lot of help out there now.
Right. And also you suffer from fibromyalgia?
Yes. Well, fibromyalgia and ME, or chronic fatigue syndrome, are really under the same umbrella. It's the body is giving us symptoms to get our awareness, as I explained. But if you're manifesting sort of the symptoms of chronic fatigue, you'll get more of the glandular and the fatigue, as opposed for a fibromyalgia, it'll be much more the joint pain and the muscle aches. But they're really the main two differences between the two. Other than that, you pretty much get the same kind of the rest of the symptoms, like, you know, people call it brain fog, headaches, irritable bowel. Sometimes you get problems with light and hearing, etc. like that. And really those are common in both conditions.
How important do you feel it is to drink water in this condition? Do you think drinking lots of clean water, actually, you know, increasing your water intake helps as well?
Water is hugely important. I mean, it's fundamental, isn't it? But I think people don't realise how much they need water to function, you know, at the optimum level. We do know, like at schools, it's been proved that children who don't drink enough water through the day, their concentration levels drop. And in the mornings, what I try to do now, and I sort of say to my clients, is, well, let's start off the day drinking water. During the night, we lose actually quite a lot of water through sweating and respiration. But a lot of people sort of start the day with a nice strong coffee and off they go, you know, getting everything going. But actually, you know, start with a glass or two of water and really give yourself a chance to get all your systems firing up and working the best for you.
Yeah. So as an ME sufferer, a former ME sufferer, do you feel now that there are still a lot of people out there who feel let down by the medical profession about ME?
I really do, yes. I mean, when I was diagnosed, it was probably around 2000. No, sorry, I was diagnosed before that. I was diagnosed about 2000, year 2000, 2001. At that time, I can remember it so clearly even now. I sat in the with the GP, and she said, "I've got your diagnosis. It's the worst diagnosis a doctor can give." And I thought, oh my goodness, what is she going to tell me?
That's terrible.
Yeah, and she said, "You have ME." Now, it's interesting because since then, I treat a lot of patients. And that still echoes through to now. People are still being told now it's a really bad diagnosis. And, of course, it isn't. It's actually just a way of our body saying, I need help, I'm emotionally at risk. How can I get you to listen to me to put things right?
So you were working as a specialist sports injury masseuse at the time when you began to get the joint pain. How did that impact on you treating your own clients? I would have imagined that would be very difficult for you, wasn't it?
It did get very difficult. The fatigue, the pain, the dreadful headaches did become very difficult. And then I went on holiday because I recognised I needed a break. And the children and I went on holiday and down to Cornwall. And then I was hit by a mystery virus that completely laid me up. And I was so ill that I just couldn't come back at the end of our designated week. And we had to sort of ask the hotel, can we please stay on longer? Because I wasn't well enough to drive us all back. And that's quite common to see with people with ME. They'll often say to you, or fibromyalgia actually, it started with the virus. But actually it started before that. It's the 2 years prior to that that we really look at. Because that's when you start to become emotionally at risk. And, of course, what I was doing was I loved my work, doing my therapy work, helping people on a physical level. And I was working very, very long hours, 6 days a week. And, as I say, I had my three children as well taken care of. And literally I just wasn't listening to myself. And, of course, the low-grade symptoms started of not sleeping so well, mild headaches, feeling out of sorts. And then the fibromyalgia started with all the muscle and joint pain. And, of course, my hands started to become so painful. And in the mornings, I couldn't actually bend my fingers. And I would lay there in absolute agony. So I've got to get my fingers working because, obviously, I was doing a physical therapy and I needed my hands. So, the body just doesn't suddenly do it overnight. Actually, it's giving you the clues all the way along. It just keeps turning the dial up until eventually brought me to an astounding halt with this virus because the immune system just couldn't cope and so weakened and allowed the virus in.
It must have been exceedingly difficult for you. I can hardly imagine what that, I can only imagine what that could have been like for you, being a massage therapist myself. You know, you rely on your hands and you rely on that flexibility in your hands. I mean, I'm not very busy as regards massage. I only do a few clients a week, but I would imagine if you had a full-on schedule, it would be exceedingly difficult. So how long did you carry on with the massage before you felt you had to give it up?
Well, I was seeing about 8 or 9 clients a day at the time, and I would do, say, 6 on a Saturday. And I would say after the virus hit and I came back, I tried to go back to work. And, of course, you know, I hadn't changed anything in my environment. I was putting myself back to exactly what I'd been doing before that made me ill in the first place. And my body basically wasn't going to have it. And then that's when the ME decided, well, okay, well, just we'll up the level of the symptoms to really get her attention. And that's where I ended up becoming bedbound. So, it was taken out of my control, really. The clinic had to stop.
Very difficult. And when you initially had the accident when you were 20, was there something in your life? What were you doing then? Were you working then? Or
I was working. I was working full-time and also training to be an accountant.
Wow.
I was a sort of real career girl then, and maths was my strong subject. So I thought, right, I'll use that. I had gone into a company in their finance team, and I thought, yes, great, I'm going to move on. I'm going to train to be an accountant and set up, you know, my own business. It wasn't the right path for me, and I had a quick turnaround with that.
Yes. And you are actually working within engineering now, aren't you?
I am, yes.
Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, what I've learned, you know, every experience I've had through my life, it's wonderful learning. You know, I don't look back at the times when I had the ME, the fibromyalgia, all the accidents and the operations and all the other things that have happened in my life. I don't look at them as negative. Yeah. The learning there is fantastic, and that's what I bring through to now. So I recognize that obviously, although I love treating people and helping people, it has to be balanced within looking after myself as well, looking after my family, having fun, balance, variety and fulfillment through my day. So what I did was I thought, well, I can't do the hours I need to cope with what we need for our financial demands by just doing therapy work. So I decided I needed a product to sell that would help sort of supplement the income. I did assume that the product would be something to do with my therapy work, but it actually turned out to be temperature controllers for what we call the tracer heating industry, where you keep, pipes from freezing or food lines open or hot water at a certain temperature so that when you turn the tap on, it's hot at the tap rather than having to run a whole load of cold water through first. So I was fortunate enough to have a friend who helped me set this company up, train me in what I needed to do to make these controllers. And so I now run an engineering company alongside my therapy practice, which is fantastic because it's so balanced. It gives me completely different forms of work. And I literally will do some therapies and go in and do some engineering and then come back and do some more therapy or some writing. And it's fantastic. I get real variety through each day.
That's incredible. And you're probably using both sides of the brain, aren't you?
Yes.
Because you're in the creative as well as in the logical.
Absolutely.
Which creates a balance in your life. I think quite often people struggle with being in one or the other, don't they?
Yeah.
And that can also, I believe, lead to an imbalance in your life where you're too much in the left or too much in the right, too much in the logical or too much in the creative. And having that balance, to some people, they would think that was a complete nightmare or nearly impossible. But in fact, I don't think it is. I think it's probably easier in all sorts of ways, don't you?
Oh, I really do. I mean, it is wonderful because I really love my therapy work. But what's so great about it is that when you're in the engineering, you're not thinking about your therapy work. You're in a completely different zone. And you're very grounded, and you're making something with your hands, and somebody's just putting an order through and buying that. And it's, so it's demanding on you in a completely different way, which means you don't burn yourself out. You don't get symptoms, and you're totally, you know, you're totally happy and fulfilled. And it's a lot of people say, oh, my goodness, you run 3 businesses. It's fantastic. It's fantastic because I literally go from one to the next to the next, and I'm fulfilling all those aspects within myself that I need to be me. Without any one of them dominating.
Yes. because I think sometimes we have to learn about structure before we can do this work, don't we? Before we can do the therapies, because if we've got no structure there, we can be very floaty in a way about things. And I think we need to be more, start with a ground, grassroots, don't we, and work upwards. You know, like you were saying in your book, I noticed about, we can talk about your book more in a minute, about creating a platform, a base, a structure, weren't you?
Yes. I think that
builds upon.
Yes, it's really important because, you know, people, we hear a lot about we have to be balanced, but actually we need to understand what that really means to be balanced. And I feel that sometimes when we're very focused on one thing, it feels a bit like we're standing on the top of a pinhead, that actually we're very unbalanced. We're holding all this and we're wobbling around just trying to keep it all together. So what I like the idea of trying to create this big platform, and which is what the book takes each chapter, and there's lots of exercises that lead you through it, gives you a really wide base that's like you can stand your feet slightly apart and you're really firm and strong, and then you can build from there. And that's what I find with the engineering. The engineering makes me very grounded. I think if I went back to just solely doing the therapy work, I again would be too unbalanced. I'd be standing back on that pinhead again.
Yeah. And things like yoga and exercises, Tai Chi, they're all about the body. They're all about balance. And I think bringing in some of those aspects can really help with the physical as well, because the physical has got to be in balance, hasn't it, with the creative and the mental, don't you think?
Oh, yes, really. And I think that's where I've learned, having done my physical therapy, you know, and setting people exercises and getting their balance back in their body between their muscles, I really understand on a physical level how important it is that we maintain balance, as well as on a mental, emotional and a spiritual level. All of them work together, all harmoniously, and that's when we're in complete health.
Yeah, terrific. Okay, so first of all, we're going to talk about Up to Me in a minute, but I want to ask you about your other book, your first novel, Perfect Choice. Can you tell us a little bit about Perfect Choice, why you wrote it, and what this book is about?
Well, as I started to work more on myself, my own self-development, which I've really focused on maybe in the last 7 years, one of the aspects that came out of it was that I really wanted to develop my creative side. At that point, I hadn't started the engineering company. And although I was terrible at English at school, my head had been telling me, well, you're terrible at English at school. You didn't ever get more than 4 or 5 out of 10 for an essay or a story or whatever. So what are you thinking of? But my body mind was saying, you know, I really want to write. So I wrote one novel which didn't ever get published called Lost Souls, and from there started writing some short stories and really started to enjoy it, had some of those published. And then I thought, you know, I want to really write a novel. And so by that time I had set up my engineering company, and it was a wonderful, again, it was that wonderful balance between, you know, giving in the engineering and then sitting and immersing myself in my creativity with writing. So I wrote this story. And unfortunately, a lot of people say they can see a lot of me in it. I didn't realize I was writing a lot about myself in it, but, you know, I suppose it's typical of any author that a lot of their own experiences and thoughts and feelings and emotions come out and you don't really realize it.
Yes, I do that.
So I caught myself out there a bit.
That's fine. I mean, we should draw on our own experiences, shouldn't we? I think, you know, we're going to, aren't we? So it just depends on which context. So Perfect Choice, who is it about? What characters have you got in it?
Well, the two main characters are Diana, and she's suffered lots of horrible instances in her past and has pretty much closed down and become quite hard and a real businesswoman and sort of rides roughshod over everybody. And then she meets this chap, Jeff, on a train who is just out to abuse women, really take them and use them for his own use and not commit and etc. like that. And so the pair of them meet, the most unlikely couple to get together, and they meet, and of course it's this push-pull all the time until eventually they both learn actually about balance, really, and about how to work together and how to improve their relationship and, of course, end up, you know, being together.
Oh, that's nice. That's really nice. And that is what relationships often are about, aren't they? Gradually getting a little bit more commitment over time.
Yeah.
And things do have to be worked at. I feel certainly, you know, it's been my experience that things are given to you, but you still have to appreciate the things that you're given, and you still quite often have to work with the things that you're given. Do you believe that?
Yes, I mean, we're all born, and we're all born with, I believe, certain character traits, and it just depends how our childhood has developed, how extreme those traits become. A lot of what we talk about in Up to Me is about balancing our character traits and understanding how we reflect other people's character traits in our relationships and friendships, work colleagues, etc., and how we can alter situations by understanding how to actually lessen the extremities of our character traits so as to bring ourselves back into the middle.
Yes. So you've laid down a simple pathway of exercises, emotional and physical. Now, I've had a look at these and I can really relate to this. I think it's great, because on the one hand, you're saying you've got two extremes, haven't you?
Yeah.
Or you've got two opposing situations. So to look at both sides, you've got to explore that, haven't you, really? But that's what some of your therapy is about, exploring both ends of the spectrum.
It is, but the first thing that is really important is there's no sense of judgment going on here, and it's done very compassionately and with detachment. So, because quite often if people feel that even by identifying something they consider as a negative trait, which I don't see any trait as negative, it's a bit like our emotions, none of our emotions are negative, they're all there for a purpose. It's just that some of them have gone a bit out of kilter and they're a little bit too extreme, and we need to bring them in. So I believe that if people can start to understand how to look at their character traits compassionately and start to work on them, and both sides of them, like you say, then that's how you can really start to make a difference. It'll be simple. We could use some simple exercises, like at the beginning, where, you know, I give lots of case studies and examples through it so people can really relate. But say someone feels they're in a very weak situation, as in they're always being pushed around by a particular person, there will be a time where they are very strong. And sometimes people go, oh, no, I'm not, this is how I always am. But then when you sit and talk to them, they go, well, yeah, actually I am with my mother. You know, I'm pretty, you know, horrible to my mum, actually, and I, you know, she wants to meet for coffee and I'm always putting her off, and I don't listen to what she wants to talk about, and I don't answer the phone when she rings. And then they realize that actually they do have the opposite of that characteristic in them. And once you start to identify you have both, you already are starting to bring it in. But you can also do that with your head mind beliefs. And this comes up quite a lot in therapy. People who have ME and fibromyalgia often are very giving people. They give, and they don't think about what they need for themselves. And I'll take an example of one lady who said that she just felt she wanted to take the pain of everybody else. She didn't want anybody else to suffer, so she always wanted to sort everything out for everybody. And of course, ended up getting fibromyalgia. And we looked at the opposite of what this was. And of course, she said to me, I don't care about myself. You know, there'll be times where I don't care about myself. And then we look at times when she doesn't care about herself and times when she's always giving. And we work through the body about how it feels, what emotions are coming up, what thoughts are coming up, all surrounded around these two key points that we've identified. And from that, we start to work them in to a point of balance in the middle where she's very comfortable, where she can give help, but she's not disempowering people. She knows her boundaries, and she feels very much more at peace. She looks after herself, and she gets to know herself. And in a way, you know, that's what so much of this is about. It's about the ancient spiritual precepts of know thyself, you know, and it all does come back to that, actually.
Yes, and I've listening to that key word there, boundaries. I feel that so often people who are therapists who are in this type of work, and in many situations actually where counsellors and where people are helping other people, they will give. And, you know, the boundary might not be that they're overstepping boundaries with their clients in any way, but they are actually not creating a healthy boundary for when they stop work, you know, for what is relaxation time.
Yes.
Do you feel that's something you've come across?
Absolutely. And in one of the chapters in the book, I use the image of, you remember the old 35mm films? You pull them out, you'd see different frames. And what I use is I use the image of a 35mm film, and I get that to be like a reflection of their life now. And each frame will contain a different aspect. So we'll have maybe the work as a therapist, and then we'll have maybe their relationship or husband-wife or the children and friends, and then their exercise, and then their quiet times, and then maybe their cultural, and then maybe they want to do some learning. And each frame contains a different aspect of their life. What often happens is when I do this with people in therapy, they can only identify maybe one, two, or three of those frames. They're so focused on maybe their career or maybe their family life or maybe their relationship that actually a lot of the others get a little bit neglected. So we need to nourish every one of our aspects of our life to make us balance and have variety, fun and fulfillment.
Brilliant. So you can never be too young or too old to learn reverse therapy. It enables honesty with yourself. So honesty is an important part of this, isn't it, really, the recovering process?
Yeah, it's hugely important, honesty. Everything comes down to honesty within ourselves. It is, you know, it's fundamentally what we need. If we can be honest with ourselves, if we're honest with how we're feeling about something, and we speak honestly and compassionately about that, we get our needs met. And again, with working through Up to Me, it's all about being honest with who we really are. There's no shame. There's nothing to be embarrassed. We're all learning. We've all got character traits that we're not so happy about, but we can all do something about them to make them excellent. And my father, who's now 84, very sweetly, when I wrote Up to Me, read each chapter through and helped me with a little bit of, you know, correcting of spellings. And if he didn't understand a concept, it was really useful because he'd never done anything like this before. And he's 84, and he found it made a huge difference to his life. He's so much happier and fulfilled in his own life as a result.
I think that's absolutely brilliant that you got your father to help you. I couldn't have imagined that my father would have ever wanted to do something like that, but I think that's absolutely brilliant. Okay, there are a few things that I've noticed from reading the book, and I'm just going to read these back to you, and we can just maybe elaborate on them a little bit more, if that's okay.
Yeah.
So we've got here, to understand the concept of balance is the kingpin of spiritual development. I think we've talked about balance quite a lot here, but to understand the concept of it, I believe that's a great statement there. You know, I agree with that very much. It is paramount, really, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And it's interesting because it's really important that everybody has their own interpretation. It's not for me to say balance is this or somebody else to say balance is that, because that's their interpretation. It's what it means to them. We all need to learn what balance is for ourselves. And this is about this self-empowerment that starts right from that first point of view. Well, what is balance? And that's what I do very early on in the book. Ask yourself, what do you think balance is? And that is your starting point, really.
Right. And empowerment may not seem instantly available or, dare I say, of importance, but as we progress, we'll come to see its true worth developing and witnessing firsthand. So many people are not empowered, are they? I mean, I do angel card readings and life guidance with people, and I see it all the time, you know. And also I have noticed that some people have no concept of what it is either, which is quite amazing to me, but nevertheless it seems to be the case.
I know, it is sad, but I want to say it's sad. I think we're all opening up. We're so fortunate to be alive now because there's so much happening on all levels and there's so much information out there, and I think people are very much more open now to understanding the importance of personal development and opening up and empowerment, and aren't afraid of it, are prepared to start saying, well, I'm going to start looking at it, and not feel a fool. I think many years ago, if you were to say, this is what you're doing, you know, I think they would fear ridicule in a way. But now it's very acceptable, and people are very accepting of it. And it's not now about what other people think. This is what reverse therapy is about. It's taking away from what other people might think, and it's what matters to you. What do you want to do and be who you want to be?
Exactly. And denying that we have certain characteristics or trying to control them as a way to dampen their obviousness isn't the answer. It may subdue them in the short term. So denial is not the route to healing, really, is it?
No, and it's such a fascinating subject when you start going down this road of characteristics, because it is hard. It's really hard to sit there and be honest with yourself and say, yeah, I have this characteristic. I'm seeing how it's manifesting. I'm not a nice person doing it. I don't like myself doing it, and I don't imagine other people like me doing it. But what is so interesting is often at the beginning, before people can recognize it in themselves, they'll see it in other people. And you'll quite often hear people moan about somebody else's characteristic. And they'll say they're selfish or they're cruel or they're whatever. And actually, what they're saying is that they are seeing the characteristics that they don't like in themselves being mirrored to them from somebody else. They're speaking about it as if somebody else, but really, the reason they don't like it and the reason it's creating that awful feeling in themselves of not liking what they're seeing in the other person is because it's about themselves. As soon as you work that characteristic in, it no longer has that strong pull. You could still recognize it in somebody else, but it won't create an emotional response in yourself when you see it. And that's amazing, because that's when you know that you've brought a character trait in.
Yes, that also reminds me of inner child therapy a little bit, that where, you know, you're reacting because deep down it is affecting you on another level because of things that's happened to you in the past. So, you know, you're sort of projecting it out there differently, but it's not your intention to project it out there, but certainly you are projecting that sort of reaction out there,
yeah,
because of something that has happened to you. Could be, you know, many years ago, but you're totally unaware of it. So this is why I think that this therapy sounds really, really good. It's like you're getting to your core beliefs, aren't you?
Yes, you are. And that's why it complements reverse therapy so well, because I mingle the two together. It's hard now in a therapy session to say which bit is reverse therapy and which bit is this new therapy that I've written about called Up to Me. But it is fantastic, because we're working on every level and every aspect. And that's how you get real, true alignment and true health.
Yes, so you say by attaining a far more rounded approach, we gain greater confidence, trust and belief in who we are without conflicting with our life purpose or identity. And identity is also something that fascinates me, because I do believe sometimes people go into like an identity crisis, don't they? They begin to wonder who they are. Have you met people experience
yes.
that yourself?
I've done it myself. I think we all have at some point. We actually get to a point in life and go, who am I? What am I doing? What's this all about? And this is where this therapy is fantastic, because it is something you can do at home. You can do it at your own pace. Take your time, but you start to really learn who you are. And then once you really know who you are confident. Everything falls into place. Your relationships are so much better. You can achieve your full potential because you know who you are.
Okay, so your book is under the name Mary Anslett, isn't it?
Yes.
Mary Anslett, not Jane Terriss. So that's an important thing for people to remember when they want to look for it on Amazon. And it's available on Amazon for $7.99?
Yes, that's right.
That right?
Yes, it is.
And also your other book is also available on Amazon, your novel, yes. A Perfect Choice. It's not A Perfect Choice, it's just Perfect Choice, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, Perfect Choice.
That's right. They're both available on Amazon. Do you feel that these two books work together in a way?
Yes, because Perfect Choice, I wrote Perfect Choice because it does bring in some of the concepts that I've explored with Up to Me, but it's brought through in the novel form, so people reading a novel will gain information and benefit without it being a self-help book. So there's bits sort of, you know, threading their way through the book. So there is definitely a link between the two, yes.
Okay, Jane, would you like to tell us a little bit about your practice, where it is, and a little bit about where you are and how people can get in touch with you?
Of course. Jane, my practice is called Jane Terris. That's spelled T-E-R-R-I-S. You can either get me on the internet under janeterris.com, where my phone number's on there. You can ring me directly or send me an email. Also, I work from Rudgwick, which is West Sussex, but because of the phones and Skypes, I can now treat all over the world, which has made it so much more available. And maryantelette.com, Antelette is spelled A-N-C-I-L-L-E-T-T-E. There's some information about therapy on there as well, but that's more focused on my writing.
Yes, I've had a look at that. It's all terrific information. Absolutely brilliant. And is there something, I mean, we've talked quite a lot about emotions and why people suffer illness, but is there something that you'd like to share with us from your own experience that is in a way helpful for people listening now, that you could say, well, this changed my life doing this particular thing, as a piece of advice or a tip, so to speak, for people just listening now?
I think one of the first things that comes to mind when you said that was to lose the fear of your symptoms in illness. And I think a lot of people get very fearful when they're suffering ME, fibromyalgia, depression. They're very confused. Lose the fear from it and realize that it is just your body talking to you. It wants you to change something or say something. And that's a really important first step, to take that on board. Another point, again, is that your body can also give you symptoms if you're just bored. Body-mind hates boredom. So if you are getting symptoms and you put yourself to bed for two hours for a rest in the afternoon, and then you wake up after 2 hours and you are still feeling as bad or even worse, then you know that you haven't listened to body-mind. Your head has said you're feeling tired, go to bed. But actually, body-mind is giving you the symptoms of tiredness, which is quite often associated with boredom, because it actually wants you to do something. Because it hasn't got the voice to say to you, I want to do something, it gives you tiredness. But the head then interprets it wrongly. So, you know, think of boredom. Body mind hates being bored. So it's a useful tip to remember.
Wow, that's really interesting. Certainly, you know, from my own experience, when I've found something to do, if it's a dark, cold, rainy night, and you think, oh no, I can't go out this evening, or I can't go dancing, which is something that I do, and get quite energized and you get ready to go and you go out, even though you were feeling exhausted, by the time you get there you seem to get this second spurt of energy, like a second lease of life, don't you?
Yes, and that's very much you being in body mind. When you go dancing, body mind's a fantastic way of being in body mind. And when beforehand it's a horrible evening, your head is saying, oh, you don't want to go out, it's not nice. And so you start feeling tired and lackluster and, oh, do I really want to do it, and a bit miserable. But then you listen to your body, and your body remembers what it was like the last time it went dancing and thinks, yeah, I want that. That's good. That's what I want to do. So you go and do it. And, of course, when you're in body mind, all your symptoms that we've just spoken about, where you're feeling miserable and tired and all that, they just go, because you are doing what body mind wants in the moment. So there's no need for creation of symptoms.
So since you've worked with this method and you've evolved this therapy, you have a lot of energy now, don't you, Jane?
I do. I mean, I don't really think about it, but then when I think about what I do in a day, then I realise, well, I must have a lot of energy to get through all of that. So, yes, I mean, we all get physically tired, but often all you need to do is change. Another little tip is, you don't get symptoms for doing too much. You just get symptoms for doing too much of the same thing. So if, you know, this comes back to when you say doing therapy work all the time. If you do too much of the same thing, or you're too much on your own, or too much with one person, too much holding in what you really feel, too much resting, you know, too much reading, etc., then you will get symptoms.
I don't do too much of one thing. I do something different every day.
Yeah.
So I think that's part of my balance myself, that I do. My business is that has got various aspects, and they all work together quite well. Yeah. And some aspects more grounding than others. But yes, I think variety is the spice of life, literally, isn't it?
It really is. It absolutely is. Fun, balance, variety, and fulfillment. Those four words are so important to ensure in our daily lives.
Yeah, okay. It's been terrific talking to you, Jane, and you've shared so much valuable information with us today. And obviously, you know, the book is out there, so if you're interested in getting the book, it is on Amazon. Is there anywhere else it's available?
It's available online in Waterstones and Smiths, and also through myself and through the publisher Completely Novel.
Right, and also it's a Kindle on Amazon, isn't
Absolutely.
It?
Absolutely, yes, sorry, yes, it's on Kindle as well.
Kindle's very good now. A lot of people have got Kindle that didn't have Kindle before. So thank you very much for being on my guest on Co-Creators.
Well, thank you very much, Jennifer, for inviting me.
Okay, thank you. Lovely
Bye.
To talk to you. Bye.